way of thinking. And in fact, there are few things that a little boy or his little sister or all of us, there are few things in this life that are more important than really understanding who is in charge. We've got to get that really straight and the implications of it. And for a little boy, isn't it important to learn that he's not in charge? Boy, if little fellows could get that clear in their mind and then stay true to that, imagine the kind of things that would fall in place that instead of them growing up and wanting to do things their way because they think they're in charge, for them to grow up knowing, no, they're not in charge. They never have been in charge. And they never will be in an ultimate sense. What a helpful thing. And I wonder, just to be honest with you, I wonder how many problems exist because there was a whole lot of people who in their youth didn't learn that. They were spoiled, they were indulged, and they grew up thinking the world owed them something because they were sort of in charge. What a mess. That has always made a mess of things. I so just wonder about that. Anyway, this is an important subject. Okay, God, let's start real. I'm intentionally with this lesson. I'm starting kind of at laying some fundamental things. Okay, God, who's in charge here? Okay, now, there are in life their parents who are in charge. There are teachers who are in charge. There are military officials. There's coaches. There's a president who is in charge. There's in areas of life, in special relationships, there are people who are, the buck stops with them. They have authority. They rule. Or trying to use the Bible definition of the word authority, but not, I'm not meaning to use it right now in some biblical sort of a way. What we're really talking about is, okay, who has the authority to direct the behavior of somebody else? Sometimes parents do, sometimes teachers do. Okay, who has authority? That's kind of what we're asking. Who has the right to command somebody concerning how they behave? To expect obedience, who is in charge? And then, is there any ultimate authority over all authorities? Is there an authority somewhere where if you trace it up the chain far enough, the buck stops here? Is there an authority like that? And if there is, we need to know it. We need to understand it. We need to be able to explain it. I mean, not just, I'm supposed to believe in God, so I guess I'm supposed to believe in God. Until you get to a point in life where you say, I have no really foundation for that belief. I have no evidence for that. So I don't know. This belief in God thing is not very strong. And boom, it gets blown away. Okay, well, watch out for that. So the purpose of this lesson is not right here to talk about the evidence for the existence of God. Okay. Part of me right now wishes that we would take time for that. Because I went through, I have my own story about all that. And there was a critical time in my life where I was getting blown away and I didn't have a foundation. I wasn't ready for the unbelief that assaulted me. And so I had to go through this process of thinking through all this. And maybe there is no evidence for God. And how do I answer this question? What am I supposed to do? So I have some very strong personal feelings. I'd really like to talk about the evidence for the existence of God. And it is an overwhelming pile of evidence, and getting into it will build your faith on solid ground. Okay, but that's not what I'm supposed to do here. So let's just start by acknowledging that there is a God. And I understand the need for evidence for that, and there's a valid place for that. But the Bible affirms that buck stops with God. In Isaiah chapter 53, chapter 52 and verse number 7, how lovely on the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who announces peace and brings good news of happiness, who announces salvation and says in Zion, here it comes, and says in Zion, your God reigns. Those last three words, your God reigns, is an affirmation in a powerful way. I know who's in charge. I know who's on the throne. God reigns. Now, if you look at the context, that is declared at a time when belief in God is being assaulted. But the one who brings good news, the one who brings peace, the one who brings happiness, the one who announces salvation is the God who reigns. That is the declaration of the Bible, that God reigns. He deserves that right because he's the creator. He is the beginning and the end. He is God. Complete and unrivaled authority over all things and all people resides in the person of God. And that authority is expressed in Jesus Christ. That is the affirmation of the Bible. Okay, now again, this lesson, I said it was fundamental, and it is. But I know too that someone may say, oh, wait a minute, you're assuming that this book says stuff that I ought to believe. In fact, you're saying that this book contains information that ought to change my life. And it's consequential. I mean, if I ignore it, Phil, you're saying that there's a price to pay for that. Yes, that's right. And so there is a legitimate place for asking the question, okay, God, is the Bible really a book from you? Is it different than every book ever written in all of human history? Is this unique? And if it is, what's the evidence for that? Why am I supposed to believe that? Because you tell me so? Because my mom and dad believed the Bible was special? Is that all I got? If that's all I got, I don't want to believe the Bible's a book from God. Okay, I understand that too. And I've been down that road. I know how that is. But I'm not trying to examine the evidence for the Bible being from God. But what I want to say is, if we can for a moment presume there is evidence for God and I believe in Him, there is evidence that this book is a book from God and I believe, I got to take it seriously. What does it say? And it answers a really important question. It tells my little grandson who's in charge, who really is the boss. Matthew 28 and verse 18, all authority was given by God the Father to Jesus Christ. Jesus exercises that authority. Man has a long history of sort of bucking against that authority. God has authority, but not everybody likes to yield to it. And so the problems that go with that are many. And the documentation of that is extreme. Jeremiah chapter 10, verses 23 and 24. Man is not able to direct his steps. Or Proverbs chapter 14, verse number 12. There's a way that seems right to a man, but the end of that are the ways of death. And that idea is repeated, at least by my count, at least four times in the book of Proverbs. So here's a book written to young people. I'm looking at some young people here. It's written to all of us. Book of Proverbs intends to give wisdom to guide a person successfully in this rough and tumble life. And at least four times it warns, be careful. There is a way that might seem like the right way for you to go. You noodle it through, you think it through, you talk to your buddies about it, and it seems like the right way to live. But it's not. Be careful. Be careful. And human history records what a mess we make when we get away from the one who really has all authority and we try to do it ourselves. It never works. From the Garden of Eden to the flood to the book of Judges, where at least two different times it says every man did what was right in his own eyes. And you read the story that goes around those statements, and man, that society was a mess. And if you are inclined to think that maybe our society is getting a little messy, it would be appropriate to ask the question, might that be happening because everybody is doing what seems right in their own eyes? It has happened before. And it is always a mess. And it's a mess because it is a failure to acknowledge who is in charge. And it isn't, we're not given the right, we don't have the ability to sort of figure it out ourselves and it work right. It doesn't. People may argue and buck against that. They may not like to hear it. Okay, then just repeat the tragedy of human history in your own life if you must. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't make a mess yet another example of the wreckage that comes when people say, I don't want to listen to God. I got this myself. I'll figure it out. Okay, don't do that. Okay, so, I mean, we could go on and on looking at the passages that talk about the authority of God. Galatians chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. I've got to watch the clock, so I know I've got to move along here. But Galatians chapter 1, verses 6 and 7 is a really important passage of Scripture. And if you will, turn your New Testaments over there and let's look at that. It is a passage that does help us see a specific application of the authority that comes from God. Verse 6 is Galatians 2. I am amazed that you are so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another, only there are some who are disturbing you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. As we've said before, so I say again now, if any man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what we have received, let him be accursed. Okay, so there's a standard, and it comes from God. What God says, where we're supposed to be. And don't let anybody get away with teaching you something that they may sort of describe as the teaching of God. Don't let them get away with it if what they're teaching really not the things from God. If they're distorting the gospel, there's condemnation at the end of that. And this passage applies the same principle that we're laying down here, that God's the one who has authority. And it is true in regard to what we believe and what we teach and where we stand, the hopes that we have. Do they come from man? Do they come from God? Are they the truth or are they a distortion of the truth? Those tough questions are an extension of this basic thing that we're talking about here. Who's in charge and what does that mean? Well, let me just move to the second part of this. Okay, so God has all authority. God's in charge. What he says is what we are to believe and do. How do we learn what God directs? If he, in a place of authority, he has the right to direct, he has the right to command, he has the right to expect obedience, and we see that, we think through that, we acknowledge that the one who made us and all this world is the one who can and should direct my life. If I buy a riding lawnmower, one of those zero-turn things, and this is my first riding lawnmower with those zero-turn things, then I probably need to read the instructions how to do this. If I don't, I am going to make a mess, and my investment probably will be wasted. What's going on here? I have to read the directions, the commands, the instruction. I have to hear from the authority of the one who made it. If I don't, I'm going to make a mess of things. And so we operate with this understanding in every area of life, and we must acknowledge that and live within it when it comes to God. And if we don't, then our lives, our children's lives, our grandchildren's lives, our country's lives are going to be a wreckage of evidence of the consequence of trying to do it some other way. And it's just not ever going to work. So we have to acknowledge. So how do we learn from God? Well, let me just say, we learn from God just exactly like I learn from you. If you're going to instruct me in something, or I'm going to instruct you in something, how does that happen? Okay, it happens so naturally, so easily between human beings. We don't even pay attention to the particulars of how it happens. We just do it all the time. So I want to slow down for just a little bit, and I want to look at how do we learn from someone else anything? Okay, I think a great place to go for this experience is an airport. Yeah. My wife hates to fly, but just a few weeks ago, we flew up to Boston. I was supposed to present some lessons up there, and Kim went with me. She hates to fly, and don't you know there's no nonstop flights from Indianapolis to Boston, Massachusetts. So we had to land in Newark, New Jersey, get off the plane, hang out for a while, get on the plane again, go through the whole process all over again. So it just doubled all the problems for Kim. Okay, but it was interesting to walk through an airport. And this, my illustration, if you have a chance sometime, and maybe you have, to go through a foreign airport where the signs aren't in English, that's even better. My question, how do you know what you're supposed to do? How do you know what you're supposed to do? Okay, well, you're going to have to slow down because it happens so naturally with us, we don't pay attention to what's going on. But let me see if I can slow down. You're walking around and you've never been here before. You're in a foreign country. You can't read the signs. What are you supposed to do? You get off the airplane. What are you supposed to do? Well, sometimes signs are written in multiple languages. That's kind of nice if one of those languages is English. And it might say, enter here. And so there's a sign, I know what it says, and I go in that door. Or it may say, you go into passport control area, and it may say, it may have a line that says, passports in this direction. And then you go in that line, and it may fork out, and it says, Sierra Leone passports this way, or Russian passports this way, all other passports this way. And so we might be able to read a sign. But you know what's the best way, and probably happens we get more information in another way, and it is by watching other people. If I'm going through security and I'm in line, you know what I'm doing? I'm watching the people ahead of me. What documents do they need? Do they take their belt off before they go through security and the X-ray and all that stuff? You have to take your coat off? There's no sign that tells you that. You might get there and there might be somebody who's an official that says, take your coat off, take your belt off. Okay, well, I'd rather avoid that moment. And so I'm watching. What documents do they have? Is it your passport? Do you need your boarding pass? Do you need some kind of identification? Or none of that? What do you do? I'm watching. And how quickly do they move? Where do they stand and wait? Do they wait for somebody to... And I'm learning by watching what other people are doing. And it happens all the time throughout such an experience in an airport. Where do you go to rest? How close to the gate do you get? Where are you sitting? And what are you listening for? And you learn so much by just watching other people. Okay, one other example, and I'll not dwell on this too much. When you go into the country of Sierra Leone, it's a very, very, very poor country, and you go through passport control, and before you go to get your luggage, there's this little kiosk, and there's some guys standing out front, look pretty like I got a uniform on, so they got to be, you know, you got to watch what you're doing.
And watch what you might say. And that little kiosk is where you can change money. And so you go from dollars to Sierra Leonean leones. And so I presume that if I'm going to get a fair shake on my transition of my American dollars to Sierra Leonean money, I can go there. I can give my $100 bill or whatever I'm going to, and give me the appropriate number of leones. That I presume that that's a safe thing. And if I have to turn over my passport to somebody for them to examine it, I know they're going to give it back to me. There's no sign that says that. And so what has happened? I have talked about this experience in a way that I hope you can see it. Maybe you have gone through your own version of that. Do you know what I just described? I just described how we learn things. And we learn things sometimes because somebody tells us. It's a direct expression of their authority, their command, their direction, their expectation. Sometimes they tell you, sometimes it's written, sometimes it's spoken, but it's a direct statement. You enter here. Passports go here. You pick up your luggage here. Direct statements. Sometimes we learn, and I submitted, that we learn most of the time by watching people who are doing things that work. They get through security. The guy's smiling at him. This thing went really well. Okay, that's what I want to do. We learn from watching the examples of others. And we learn by enough information that guarantees a particular outcome. We learn by implication. I know that if I write to the Sierra Leonean embassy and send them $180, they will give me a visa to enter the country of Sierra Leone. There's nothing written about that, but the implication is the Sierra Leone embassy in Washington, D.C. will give me a document that the officials in the country of Sierra Leone will accept as valid and will allow me to enter the country. That is understood. I learned by inferring this relationship, and I confidently move from holding my document to entering their country. It's just so. We learn in everything we do by people telling us or showing us or by implication. And I want to submit that there was no other way that it happens. That we are made to communicate. I was picking on this fellow over here. If he wanted to tell me something, he would give me information, give me instruction. The only way I would learn what he wants me to do would be one of three ways. He's either going to tell me, or I'll watch his example and I'll learn how I'm supposed to handle, I'll follow in his footsteps. Or I'll know enough about the situation that I can draw a deduction of what I'm supposed to do and do it with absolute confidence that it's right. And there's no other way. There are no other ways to know the mind of somebody else and what they expect of us. Now, I grew up, now I've been intentionally avoiding some things. So now I'm not going to do that anymore. I grew up hearing preachers talk about commands, examples, and necessary inferences. Okay, when I grew up, I want to tell you, I thought that was preacher speak. I didn't. I thought, well, okay, he just lost me. He went over my head. And they applied that to the work of the church and to how a church is to use its money and to a lot of other things. Is there a command? Is there an example? Or is there a necessary inference? And I remember that, and I have since thought that through myself. Is that valid? Is that just made-up Church of Christ stuff that we use to validate what we want to believe? Is that what's going on here? And if the answer to that was yes, I want nothing to do with that. I would reject command, example, necessary inference. If that's all we got, we're going to kind of defending our denomination. I know enough about the Bible to know denominationalism is not the plan of God. I want nothing to do with that. And if that's what's going on, I'm not buying in. But that's not what's going on. That is not what's going on. What is expected of us and what we're trying to use are the same tools that God has given and expects everybody to use. How do we know the mind and will of the one who is in charge? The buck stops with him. Okay, how do I know what he wants me to do in this book? How do I discern that? And the answer is, the only ways we discern what anybody communicates to us. Does he tell us? Does he show us? Is there enough information that forces me to an unavoidable, confident conclusion about his will? And when I find that he speaks directly about something, or I see examples that show his approval of them, or I see the clear implication that what needs to be understood, I have learned the will of God just like I learned what that guy over here wants me to do. It's the same thing. God, who made us and made us with an ability to communicate with each other, has stepped into this world to communicate with us in the ways that he made us to communicate. And one other thing, and then I'll kind of draw this to a conclusion and some applications. The other thing about this is that we communicate our will, or somebody else communicates their will to us, in general ways or specific ways. I use the example in an airport. If the sign says, passports this direction. Okay, that is a direct statement, but it is also information generally. Okay, passports. Which passport? It doesn't say. It's generally, if you have a passport to show, then you go this way. Now, on down that line, it may fork, and it will say Sierra Leonean passports this way, or it might say West African nation passports, the second line, all others go this way. All right, now you've got some specific information. I've got a United States passport. It's not Sierra Leonean. It's not West African. It's American. I go the third path. Why? Because there is specific information given. And so we do that. We don't think, okay, at first I'm getting general information. The specifics are not provided. Okay? We don't go through that process. It just happens so naturally. We walk on down. Now I'm looking at specific instruction. They're telling me which line to get into. We don't think about that either. It just happens so naturally. What we need to know is that's what happens in the Bible. God told Noah to build an ark, told him about the size of it. General information, build an ark. Okay, we got more specific when he described the size of it. In fact, he was very specific about the size. He was very specific about the wood that it was to be made from. So God expresses his will in a general way and in specific ways. And when he expresses his will in specific ways, to do otherwise is to violate the authority of God. What if I had taken my American passport, and I just stayed in the Sierra Leonean line? I don't like this. You don't have to tell me. You're not going to be able to tell me what line to go into. I want to go in whatever line I want to go in. I want to go in this line over here. So I take my little American passport, and I walk down the Sierra Leonean line, and I get to the passport control guy, and he looks at that, and he looks up at me like, who do you think you are? You're in the wrong line, buddy. I'll be rejected. Why? Because I didn't pay attention to the specific authority that's given. And when a government speaks specifically, and they have authority in this realm, then my responsibility is to follow that. And when they speak generally, then the same thing is true as well. Okay, follow what is the authority that is given. Okay, now, I think I heard the bell. I did. I got 5 minutes. Okay. So why is there so much confusion, religious confusion, in this world. One area that needs to be honestly explored is the one that we're talking about here. Could it be that there is a problem recognizing who's in charge, and then understanding how to relate to the one who's in charge? And what if everybody who claimed to believe in God and believe in Jesus read their Bibles and said, okay, I'm going to listen to God like I listen to my friend or like I communicate with anybody else. What does he say? What does he want me to do? And then if he speaks in a general way, like build an ark, okay, then we'll do that. And as he speaks more specifically, if he does speak specifically, then I will pay attention to his instruction just like I would anybody else's. How far in this do we go? How specific do we go in all of this? The answer is as specifically as God does. As specifically as God does. So the application to all of this is beware of sort of a self-directed, I'm in charge mentality. How does God want us to worship? How does God want a church to work? How does God want your family to work? How do you raise your children? How do you behave on your job? How do you act when nobody's watching? What do you look at on your computer or on your phone? All these areas, all these questions, all these decisions, who's in charge? And if we would yield to the authority of God, understand how he communicates to us, and then understand that communication, yield to his will, instead of there being this division and confusion, can you see how things begin to line up? And it is just as God would have us do it. Clowns for Jesus was an advertisement that got my attention in Newcastle, Indiana a few years ago. A group of people who identified themselves as the New Testament Church of Christ sent out a flyer, and they were inviting everybody to come to Clowns for Jesus. And so I responded, and asked for basically, how do you justify such an approach from the Bible? What is your authority? And that my response got shuffled down to the youth minister, somebody second in charge or whatever that was, and he acknowledged that really we need to change the name of our church. It's really not New Testament Church of Christ, because, we're really not following the New Testament. And he was okay with that, but he was honest enough to acknowledge that. Okay, but what if we just yielded to the one who has authority in the work that we do and in the things that we believe and we teach? There are a few things in this life that are more important for a child to understand, get a grip on, than who's in charge. There are a few things that you and I, that are more important for us to think through than the question, okay, God, who's in charge? And then if I know you're in charge, how do I access your brain? How do I know what you want me to do? There are a few things that are more important and more fundamental than those kind of considerations. We get those things straight and clear. The foundation under us begins to solidify. There's a whole lot of things to deal with after that. But that's a pretty important place to start. And that's where I wanted to start and ask you to think about with me this morning. Thank you for your time and thank you for your consideration. You help me with this lesson, fill it out, and you add to my series of lessons on, okay, God, I've got questions, and you'll be my friend. Thank you.